Acts 24, 25, and 26. When we finish chapter 23, the soldier in charge of the garrison at Jerusalem had decided he wanted to pass Paul off to somebody else rather than try to figure out what was happening there. And so the soldiers wrote a letter to Felix, who was the governor, and said, "I'm sending this man to you. There was a problem, and he said that he was a Roman citizen, so I figured you're the one to handle this." And when the governor heard that Paul was from Caesarea, he said, "Yeah, sure, I'll hear that case." And so they brought Paul to where the governor's palace was, and remarkably, there were 200 soldiers that guarded him as he was transferred from Jerusalem to Caesarea. 200 soldiers to guard one preacher. So he arrived, and he was placed in jail. And 5 days later, the high priest shows up for the hearing, and with him comes this fellow named Tertullus, who is an orator, according to the Old English. Must have been quite a show. So what do they say about Paul? Obviously they don't like him. They wanted him arrested. But what do they accuse him of?
Stirring up people.
Stirring up the people. They say he's a pest. Well, I don't know what you do at your house with pests, but I swat them. And so they call him one. They want him swatted. They want him killed. They say he's a seditious person. He stirs up trouble, rebellion against the Jews all around the world. I mean, this guy is really known for his sedition. Actually, that was kind of true. Everywhere he went, people got stirred up, either for God or against him, one or the other. So these remarks are kind of true. They say he's the ringleader of this sect of the Nazarenes. There wasn't a sect of the Nazarenes. It did not exist. They made this up. Jesus was born in Nazareth, and he was sometimes referred to as the Nazarene. But there never was a group called the Nazarenes. They made this up. Now Paul's the leader. Good for him. I guess they didn't understand anything about the apostles in Jerusalem. They only knew Paul. This would make a good discussion. Why is it that they didn't oppose the apostles who were in Jerusalem the way they opposed Paul? Well, actually they did, because they had James killed. And Peter had been arrested a couple of times, but they couldn't keep him in jail. God kept sending angels to let Peter out of jail. And now they think they've got Paul. I think they especially didn't like him because he was so open to the Gentiles. Paul had a sense that the transition from the Judaistic worship of God to the more universal worship of God. And Paul seemed to know that that had taken place. They accused him of profaning the temple. Oh, he says bad things about this. He brings Gentiles into our holy place. Funny how people get attached to a building. This morning after church, Seth and Martha were running around, and Seth tripped over a bag. Did you see that? Yeah, okay. And I just looked at him and went, good for you.
Simon did it.
Simon pushed him?
No, Simon put the bag.
Oh, Simon put the bag. Yeah, okay. And Seth tripped over it. But I remember people who would say, "You shouldn't run in church. This is God's house." Huh. And you get that from which verse of the Bible? Where did that come from? Because as I see it, the church, not the building, but the people, the congregation, the assembly, is called the house of the Lord. And as I read it, the individual Christian is called the temple of the Holy Spirit. So to say the kids shouldn't run in church kind of misses the point. Now, maybe they shouldn't run around when they're adults trying to talk. In that case, yes, they shouldn't be running around in a church meeting. Okay, fine, got that. But in the building? It's just a building. It's made with the same kind of bricks they made that house with next door. Or the garage beyond that. No. They accused Paul of profaning the temple. It's not like he spray painted graffiti all over the walls. They were upset because he was there. Well, they say, and honestly, we would have handled this, but the soldiers intervened. That's true. They would have killed Paul if the soldiers hadn't intervened. In fact, they were even plotting his death, and that's why the soldier decided to send Paul away, because he wasn't sure he could keep Paul safe. And they conclude, so here we are. This guy is obviously rotten to the core, and you need to do something about it. Paul is allowed to speak for himself. What does he say? Twelve days ago, it's true, I went to Jerusalem to worship. There have been, in my lifetime, a number of religious leaders who were troublemakers. And when they got into trouble, I said, good, because they shouldn't be troublemakers. If they want to make trouble and they get trouble, that's what they deserve. But Paul wasn't a troublemaker. He was just preaching the truth. It was the people who didn't like to hear how sinful they were and didn't like to hear that they couldn't work their way to heaven. Those are the people who caused the trouble. And so Paul says, 12 days ago, it's true, I went to Jerusalem to worship. But this stuff that they're talking about, that's not true. They can't prove any of this. Pity the poor governor. He's got this big group of people that came from Jerusalem, including the high priest and this well-known orator, and they've accused Paul of all this stuff. And Paul, who is basically a nobody, says, that's not true. Imagine if you had to be the judge in this situation. What would you do? So he lets Paul continue to talk. Paul says, I'll confess this. I'll confess that the way I worship, they call heresy. That's true. Do they still have heresy police in this country? I know they used to. Does anybody know if that still exists? Did you know they used to? Oh, see, you missed it. Yeah. They used to have heresy police. Anytime religion controls the government, there will be heresy police. It doesn't matter which religion it is. Anytime religion controls the government. Doesn't mean it has to be a religious government. It just means that religion has so much power that it controls the government. There will be heresy police. The same thing happened in Switzerland when John Calvin was around. They had heresy police. They would even punish little kids for misbehaving and talking back to their parents. The kids would get arrested and would get punished for it. It was a horrible situation. Even when the best of men control religion, if they control government, it's not a good situation. The only way you can have a religious control of government is if God does it. When God is the one at the top, then it's fine. But you put some sinful guy in there and he messes it up. Well, Paul says, the way I worship, they call it heresy. But I want you to know that I worship the God of my fathers, and I believe all the writings of the prophets. And I have the same hope for the future, the hope of a resurrection that was preached throughout the Old Testament. Though he doesn't use that phrase, Old Testament. He's pointing back to history, and he says, I'm just following what my ancestors taught. And he says, I've served God with a good conscience. And I've tried not to offend God or men. And so here I was with this clean attitude. And I was coming to Jerusalem to bring alms, to bring offerings for the poor, to help my poor countrymen. And then this all happened. Some Jews from Asia, they're the ones who should be here. These Jews from Asia who are accusing me of all this stuff, they're not even here. Where are they? Let them raise an accusation. They can't prove it. Well, at that point, the governor says, I've heard both sides. I think I better wait till this soldier in charge gets here. So the garrison commander shows up. I want to hear what he has to say. So he keeps Paul in prison, and he waits for the soldier, Lysias, to show up. No, it took a long time for that to happen. In fact, that soldier never did show up. So what did they do with Paul? For 2 years, they kept him in prison. Talk about not getting a fair and speedy trial. Well, for 2 years, he's in prison. Basically a political prisoner, because the governor has this political situation. He doesn't know what to do with this. If he sets him free, then the Jews get mad at him. He's not really sure that he ought to kill him because he is a Roman citizen. So sometimes no decision is the best decision. We'll wait. But meanwhile, back at the ranch, he says, I think I ought to talk to this guy more often. Maybe there's more to it than this. So regularly, he has Paul brought up out of his cell and talks to him. Well, what does Paul talk to him about? The weather? Politics? You know, who's winning at the Colosseum? No, he talks to him about righteousness and temperance and judgment. And it says Felix trembled when he heard these things. He was convicted. It also says that he expected that Paul would offer him money for his freedom. Talk about corruption. Must have been normal.
Where does it say that?
Oh, where does it say that? That's a good question. Must be chapter 24 somewhere.
25. 24, verse 25.
Okay. Yeah, he hoped that money should have been given him by Paul, that he might set him free. 2 years later, this guy loses his job. Somebody else takes his office. Yeah, Paul got to witness to him regularly.
Here on 23, he was about some freedom, and he was immediately spread to go and see him.
Right?
That's 23.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his friends were allowed to come visit him. So for the 2 years, Paul stays in prison until Felix is replaced by Festus. I knew the name Festus only from the old Gunsmoke TV show.
When I said his wife's name sounds like,
what
was it, 101 Dalmatians?
I thought Cruella that.
DeVille?
Cruella DeVille. I thought the same thing. Yeah. Well, Festus shows up. We have a fellow in the church named Festus now. And Festus comes into the office, and it must be a horrible thing to take over for somebody else, because you have all of their unfinished business that you have to handle. Plus, you have to learn all the new people and faces and who to smooze and who not to. And so he wants to do a favor for the Jews. And he travels to Jerusalem, and the high priests and the chief of the Jews complain about Paul. Oh, yeah, we're glad you're our new governor, because there's this horrible guy who's in prison, and the old guy would never do it. The old governor would never do anything, but now you're in a place to do it. We think you ought to send him down here and let us handle him. Oh, yeah, they're going to handle him. The conspiracy to kill him still exists. Don't know if those 40 guys who...
The same guys? Have they eaten yet?
The 40 guys who swore that they wouldn't eat anything until Paul was dead.
Yeah.
And he's been in jail for 2 years. You wonder what they look like now. Yeah. You know, when you When you make a vow to God, you're supposed to keep it. But if you make a vow to God and later find out that that was a foolish or sinful vow, then it's better to break the vow than to persist in the sin. Ecclesiastes says that, yes. Well, the governor says, no, I think we'll just keep him in prison at Caesarea, and how about you guys coming over there and we'll talk about it. Alright, so, you know, go down there and accuse him lawfully in front of a court, openly. Oh. Somebody loves you. So what happens is that the new governor does indeed keep his word, and the next day he sits at the judgment seat and commands Paul to be brought in. And they hear all these complaints against Paul, and Luke adds, of course, they couldn't prove any of it. And Paul speaks for himself, and he says in verse 8, not against the law of the Jews, not against the temple, not against Caesar, have I offended at all. None of this is true. But Festus, willing to do the Jews a favor, asked Paul, would you go to Jerusalem and be judged there? And Paul says, I will not. I'll stand at Caesar's judgment in Rome. Against the Jews, I have done nothing wrong, and you know it. If I've offended, if I've committed anything worthy of death, then kill me. I don't refuse to die. But if there are none of these things can be proven, then nobody can deliver me to them. I appeal to Caesar. I guess he knew the law. And nothing wrong with not only knowing the law, but using it when you need to. Now Festus really does have a problem, doesn't he? And so he confers with his council and says, okay, well, if that's what you want, that's what you get. Paul stays in jail, of course. And after a while, the king of that area, King Agrippa, shows up, along with his wife. You notice that these guys always show up with their wives? It's a good thing in politics. You know, the king drags out the queen. People pay attention to her and don't really see what he's doing. Of course, that got that Persian king in trouble, didn't it, back in the days of Esther? When he tried to parade his wife around, she says, I will not. I'm not going to show myself in public just for you. So he got rid of her, replaced her. Preachers do the same thing. When they go visiting, they always drag their wife around, say, this is my lovely wife. And I know that the wives are lovely because when the preachers are introduced, the introducer always says, and this is Pastor Smith and his lovely wife, Anna. They never say, this is Pastor Smith and his ugly wife, Anna. They never say that. And so Festus has his wife, Cruella de Vil, Drusilla. And Agrippa comes with his wife. What's her name?
Bernice.
Okay. So they show up and Festus declares Paul's case to the king. And he pretty much lays it out the way it is. And he says, I really didn't know what to do with him. And I figure you're smarter than I am, so the ball's on your court now. And Agrippa agrees to hear this case. But he figures that they ought to understand for sure what the charges are, because it didn't seem right to send the prisoner to Rome without having a written notice of what it is that the prisoner is accused of. And so they thought they ought to have a hearing. And they do that. And in chapter 26 then, Paul is allowed to speak for himself. His defense, it's not really a defense, it's just a statement of the facts, though maybe that is a defense. His defense can be divided into three parts. And somebody used this outline when I was younger, and I've always remembered it. We all know what AC and DC are in terms of electrical current, right? Okay. And we know what BC is in terms of chronology. And so what we have here is BC, which is before his conversion, right? And then we have DC, which is during his conversion. And then we have AC, which is after his conversion. Right? I've always remembered that. It's just stuck in my head. In fact, I wrote it in my book. That's a good way to remember it. So what does he say about his life before his conversion? And he doesn't really offer us much that's new here. If we've been reading the book of Acts, we already know these facts. But he basically tells us that he was a good little Jewish boy, and he went to a good little Jewish school, and he became a good little Jewish leader, and went out to kill Christians. That's what his life was. That he was a Jew of the Jews. He kept the law. Nobody ever accused him of violating the law at all. Not many of us can say that about our lives before our conversion. But he claims that. And then he tells us how he got converted. Well, how did that happen? Was it in a church meeting? No, he was converted along the road. Was he converted in his hometown? No, he was on a business trip. And was he converted at night? Nope, it was the middle of the day. In the dark? Nope. Bright sunlight. In fact, it was so bright, it blinded him and the guys around him didn't really see what was going on. And so he recounts his conversion experience. And then he talks about what happened to him after his conversion. And that begins in verse 19. And he says, King Agrippa, I was obedient. You know, heaven said I should do this and this, and that's what I did. In fact, at times I even had to run for my life. And God sent me to the Gentiles. He's interrupted, verse 24, by Governor Festus. And Festus says, are you nuts? Too much education has made you crazy. I used to say that. Well, I'd be studying and studying and studying, and I go, this is making me nuts. I couldn't handle the pressure. Festus thinks Paul knows too much for his own good. And Paul says, no, I'm not mad, most noble Festus. At least he's polite. No, not me. I'm just telling you the truth. In seriousness. The king knows these things. I mean, he knows real well the things that I'm talking about. Because none of these things have been hidden from anybody, and the king certainly knows what's going on in his kingdom. And then he turns to the king and he says, King Agrippa, do you believe this? And Agrippa says, Paul, you've almost persuaded me to be a Christian. That's the second time the word Christian is used. You know, the first time is in Antioch, where the Gentiles are called Christians. And then here, the king says, you almost persuade me to be a Christian. Paul said, I wish it was not only almost, but altogether that you were persuaded to be a Christian. Now, when he had finished that, the king and the governor and the queen had a bit of a talk. And they said, you know, this guy hasn't done anything that warrants putting him to death. But he appealed to Caesar, so I guess we'll send him to Caesar. I don't know anything about Roman law, so I don't know if they had to do it. Or whether they could have just set Paul free. I don't know that.
Do you think that Agrippa was being ironic when he said that, or that?
You mean like he thought that maybe Paul was worthy of death?
No, no, no. Before, when he said, are you quickly persuaded to become a Christian?
Almost. I don't know how true that was. I don't know. When I read that, I look at that and think, now if some people had been in Paul's shoes, they would have said, well, let me tell you again, because I've got a better way of putting it this time. Because they have this idea that if you aren't persuaded to be a Christian, then I must not have done my job right. So let me explain it from a different angle, or with a little more authority, or with more illustrations, or maybe with a flashy multimedia display and soft music playing on the organ in the background, or maybe if we had colored curtains and nice carpet, or we changed the situation. But surely, if you're not yet persuaded, then there's something I haven't done and I need to do that. Paul says, sorry, because Paul realizes that it isn't our much speaking that persuades people to become Christians. God must change their hearts or they don't understand anything. In Paul's writing to the Corinthians, he said, I don't have powerful words and fancy speeches. I don't talk like that. Though we might disagree when we read the book of Romans.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Yeah, I was just thinking that was pretty fancy.
Yeah, but he says he wasn't an orator. Sorry? Well, sometimes other people would write down what he told them to write.
They don't change anything.
Apparently not. And often he wrote himself.
He spoke from conviction. Look what happened to him on a road.
Yeah.
So many things happened before him, before that in his life. He was a powerful man.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lord didn't choose a big castle or a huge church to convert him in on the road. So he speaks from conviction and personal experience. And I think that's why he says to Agrippa, short time or long, it doesn't matter. I just wish, you know, time doesn't matter. When God decides, God decides. Has really nothing to do with
it.
You know,
the
Lord told him.
So when he says that this man could have been set free, that sort of says what his sentence will be then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why I'm wondering, well, why didn't they do it? I mean, just because a guy appeals to the Supreme Court, if he's innocent, then why waste the Supreme Court's time with this? I didn't understand that myself.
Well, was that some sort of Roman law, maybe?
Maybe.
That's what I thought it was. Once
maybe.
You appeal, you must go before the... Because maybe somebody could drag him and say, no, you're not going to the Roman court. We're going to decide for you. I'm a Roman citizen. I have the right to be here.
But if Agrippa had said, hey, the guy's innocent, set him free.
I think everybody's passing about.
Well, that's how I see it. I think that they didn't want the responsibility.
Exactly.
They just wanted to pass him on to someone. Like they do with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
They just wanted to pass him on to somebody.
Well, the Jews are definitely not going to get mad at Agrippa.
No.
Well, I like to do that. If I've misplaced something, I always blame Wilma.
Well, you and my husband went to the same school.
We did.
I
remember those guys. They were a little bit older than I.
Yeah.
And so there is Paul's defense before three different government officials.
Yeah.
And two times again to the Jewish leaders. And in chapter 27, we have him heading off to Rome.
Because the tiring.
Must be. Have you ever read a book written by somebody who was in prison? Somebody who was in prison for political or religious reasons. I remember reading a book by a Russian guy who was imprisoned for his faith. And the title of the book is I Found God in Soviet Russia. I remember the book. I read it when I was a kid. And it was amazing. Because in prison, you don't have a lot of things to do. But have you ever said, I wish I had more time to meditate on the Word of God? I wish I could spend more time in prayer? I wish I could spend more time listening to what God had to say? Have you ever said that? Well, maybe prison is where we all need to go. We'd have lots of time then.
Well, we could also go to a nice resort.
Yeah, but in prison, somebody else pays the bills. Except for Paul. He ends up in his own hired house a couple of times where he has to pay the rent. What kind of prison is that? I was thinking of what he said when he said, I went to Jerusalem to worship. What a horrible thought that somebody who is going to worship God ends up in prison. But it has happened. It has happened. And it continues to happen. China right now is pressing to stop house churches like this. They're trying to put a stop to that before the Olympics because they don't want any of that to get out. It'll look bad. But they're not the only country that's done that. Several other Asian countries have put pressure upon Christian groups to stop meeting in illegal gatherings. I remember Jerry saying when he went to China, there was a big sign outside in English that said Chinese people aren't allowed in, only foreigners.
Why is it so threatening? I don't get it.
It is threatening. Because the people who are threatened think they have to control, and if they allow the freedom of information, they'll lose control. They're afraid that if they don't rein things in, they'll lose their flock. Any society that wants to control information.
Yeah, I can understand that in other areas, but not religion.
Because it's not the truth. Christians aren't afraid of this. Open discussion is the best thing that can happen. We have no secrets. We don't have any secret societies and secret handshakes and secret passwords and all the rest. We don't do that. In fact, Paul said that to the Corinthians several times. He says, what you read is what I write. And there's nothing secretive about this. We're not afraid to let the world know what we talk about. Now, there have been some things that the world accused the early Christians of, and that's because the world didn't really know what was going on. They heard something and then it got twisted out of proportion. One Roman governor wrote to Caesar and said, these Christians, they're cannibals. Where did he get that idea? Because somebody had said that when they have this thing they do, they say, this is my blood, drink you all of it. Or this is my body, which is broken for you. And so they took these very common and precious statements that we mention in communion, and they put some other twist to them. The Christians were accused of being seditious and revolutionaries because they talked about a kingdom which is not of this world, and God is their king. And so it was thought that they weren't good citizens. And other accusations that have been brought against them. Now, the same is true today. Like you say, in other areas, it's very common. And you wonder why religious people would want to squelch the opposition. And I can see that the opposition is lying, making false accusations. But if it's just their preaching that's bad, let them say what they will. Now, they don't have the right to say it in our gatherings. We wouldn't allow somebody to come in here and preach Satanism. We wouldn't allow that. There have been times, though, when Christians in control of government had said, oh no, we'll stop all of this. Again, a society that punished little kids for back-talking their parents, that society would put to death preachers of heresy. And these were Christian societies. Now, these weren't pagan societies that did that. Must be tough to be a Christian and in government. Must be very difficult. I liked what Festus said to Agrippa. He said, I heard this case, and the Jews accused this guy of breaking their laws, and he keeps talking about this fellow named Jesus who is dead, but Paul keeps saying he's alive. Do you remember reading that? It's a pretty good explanation of things. Pretty good. The unsaved don't understand what we're talking about. Of course they don't. The natural man doesn't understand the things of the Spirit of God. But to those who are saved, it makes perfectly good sense. Either Jesus is alive or he isn't. And if he isn't, well then, just leave your books on the table on the way out. And don't bother coming back. But if he is alive, well then we want to know him better. Figure out more of what he wants us to do. I'm not sure I'm ready for 2 years in prison. Wouldn't enjoy that at all. But if that would be for God's glory and would lead to Christians getting closer to Christ and unsaved people hearing the gospel, well then okay, I can do that. Paul was willing to do that. He was willing to give up his life for the glory of God and the good of other people. He was following Christ to the end. We never hear him complain. Never. The closest thing to a complaint is in his writing of 2 Corinthians. And he talks about all the times he was shipwrecked or stoned or beaten. And at the end of that he says, not to mention the care of all the churches. And it seemed to me that at that point he wasn't complaining, but that's about as close as he gets. He just listed. It was just an honest listing of the trouble he had seen. He just keeps going. Because God said, it's okay. Just as you've witnessed for me in Jerusalem, you will witness for me in Rome. Wouldn't you like to know where you were going to be before the end of your life? You know, I have trouble knowing tomorrow and the next day and the day after that. But he knows that he's not going to die until he's been at Rome. Now, he doesn't know when that'll be, but you can kind of calculate how long it takes to get there. Well, that's our reading for today. Rosie, where to for Thursday? What do we read?
Colossians 1.
Colossians 1. All right. So we finish the book of Acts and the first of Colossians 1.